Welcome to Journal Club for November 18th, 2024. I'm Malcolm Diggs. Let's say you and I are standing right next to each other at the finish line of a Formula One race. I don't know how we got these seats, just go with it for now. We're both standing there, we both have our phones out, and we're both trying to capture the final moment of the race. It's the last lap, and Max Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton, whoever you like, comes rounding the final turn and speeds to the finish line. You and I are ready, but we're taking slightly different approaches to capturing this moment. You are taking a still photo, so you're going to wait until the exact moment he's passing by the checkered flag to take your photo. I want the final photo too, but I don't want to worry about clicking my camera at the perfect time and capturing the exact moment, so I'm taking a video instead. I figure that if I take a video of him passing by, I can just pull the still frame out of the video. He crosses the line, everybody cheers, I film it, you take the photo, and now you and I compare our shots to each other. You show me yours. You did it. It's crisp and clear. It looks just like it did when he passed by. Then I pull up my video, grab the right frame, and show you mine. It looks like crap. It's blurry and insanely distorted. His car looks way longer than it should, and it's a bizarre shape. My photo is horrible. Your photo is good. Why? Shutter speed. Your camera was probably snapping photos at 100 or more frames per second, and if you had a high-speed shutter turned on, it may have well been an order of magnitude more than that. My shutter speed was, by default, twice my frame rate. I was filming at 30 frames per second, so my shutter speed was 60 frames per second. So when the driver passed by, your shutter opened and closed, likely in just over a couple milliseconds. In the time that your shutter was open, all the light from everything you were seeing happening in front of your face entered the lens of the camera, including the movement of the car. But in that short of a time frame, the car really barely moved, only a few centimeters at most. But the frame I pulled out of the video takes place over a longer period, 10 times as long. So during the time that my lens was collecting light, the car moved 10 times as far, and the photo represents that. Thus the blur, thus the odd shape, and the elongation. Now, imagine that you're working on a computer vision tool, a model that can detect the presence of an F1 car in a photo. You train it on a bunch of photos, you go through all the usual processes, and then you use it and it works great. On photos. But then you think, oh, I want to try this out on video. Videos are just a series of individual frames, right? So you think I should be able to run my model on the individual frames and get the same detection results from video that I do from photos, right? Wrong. And you just experienced why that's the case. Still frames from a video are technically just photos, that is to say, they are static representations of a single click of a shutter. But that does not mean that the objects in the frame of a video look anything like the objects do when you're looking at a photo, especially if those objects are moving. The objects that exist in frames of a video are going to be misshapen, blurry versions of those same objects when they're pictured in a photo. So your computer vision is useless here. It's not going to get the results you wanted. What to do about that? Do we just need to train on blurry stuff and distorted stuff? How do we solve this? Well, that's where today's research paper comes in. In this article, the authors have developed an object detection method specifically made for videos. And their argument is simple. Yes, the objects in the videos will be distorted and blurry and therefore harder to identify, but video has something stills do not, the other frames of the sequence. That's useful information, because even if we couldn't detect the object from this single frame, when we look at what the object looked like before this frame, we have a better chance of identifying it in all the frames. Let's look at what this system does in detail, how they built it, trained it, and how they tested it. The system employs a one-stage object detection model, YOLO, as its foundation. Unlike two-stage detectors that rely on region proposal networks, that's RPNs, to generate candidate object regions, an inherently computationally intensive process, YOLO bypasses this stage by directly predicting bounding boxes and classifications in a single pass through the network. This design allows for faster inference speed, a critical feature for real-time applications. The YOLO model serves as a lightweight yet robust baseline, leveraging CSP Darknet as its backbone for efficient feature extraction. This backbone strikes a balance between computation and feature representation, ensuring sufficient granularity to detect objects under varying conditions of motion and occlusion. The system integrates a space-time feature aggregation, STFA, module to address the inherent limitations of frame-by-frame object detection. The STFA module enhances the quality of current frame features by aggregating relevant information from previous frames. It achieves this through a space-time memory network, SMN, which identifies and retrieves features from, quote, memory frames, that's key frames from the past, that strongly correlate with the current frame's features. The SMN calculates pixel-level similarity matrices between past and current frame features, effectively weighting the contribution of each memory frame's features. These aggregated features are then integrated into the current frame's representation, enriching the detection model with temporal context and improving its resilience to transient visual anomalies. To further stabilize detection results, the system employs a result reuse, that's RR module, that capitalizes on stable detection outputs from past frames. By incorporating detection results that persist over time, the RR module ensures smoother and more consistent predictions in scenarios involving occlusions, abrupt object movements, or partial visibility. It uses a distance-based matching algorithm to compare detected objects between consecutive frames and updates their confidence scores, bounding box dimensions, and classifications based on a combination of past and current observations. This approach prevents the system from overreacting to transient changes in object appearance, thus reducing false positives and misdetections. The RR module also introduces parameters like a balance factor for weighting past detections and a threshold for matching objects across frames. A key strength of the system lies in its ability to balance accuracy and speed by relying exclusively on past frame information while eliminating the need for future frame data. This design choice aligns with the requirements of online video object detection, where only previously seen frames are accessible at any given moment. By avoiding the computational overhead associated with processing future frames, a feature common in offline detection methods like Seek NMS and Mega, the system achieves a trade-off between real-time inference and detection quality. The system was trained on the ImageNet VID dataset, a benchmark dataset specifically designed for video object detection. This dataset includes 3,862 training videos and 555 validation videos, annotated across 30 object classes, which are a subset of the 200 classes from the ImageNet DET dataset. To enhance training robustness, additional samples from ImageNet DET were incorporated, specifically for each object class, at least 10 video frames from ImageNet VID and about 1,500 images from ImageNet DET were selected, ensuring a diverse and sufficiently large dataset for model training. The training process employed a two-stage approach to optimize both feature extraction and detection accuracy. In the first stage, the backbone network's parameters, the CSP darknet in this case, were frozen to preserve its pre-trained ability to extract robust features. During this stage, only the parameters of the newly added layers, including the STFA and the RR modules, were updated. The model was trained for 50 epochs with a batch size of 16, allowing the new layers to converge without disrupting the pre-trained feature extraction layers. In the second stage of training, all parameters of the network, including the backbone, were unfrozen for fine-tuning. This allowed the entire model to adapt to the combined spatial and temporal dynamics of the dataset, enabling tighter integration of the feature extraction and detection layers. During this stage, the batch size was reduced to 4, ensuring that the model could process larger input frames with increased computational focus on detail. Training continued for an additional 70 epochs, enabling the network to refine its detection capabilities holistically. The training process utilized the Atom Optimizer, which is well-suited for handling sparse gradients and adaptive learning rates in complex networks. A weight decay regularization of 0.0005 was applied to prevent overfitting, particularly when training on high-dimensional feature spaces. To further stabilize the optimization process, a cosine annealing learning rate schedule was employed. This technique gradually reduced the learning rate in a cosine pattern, promoting smoother convergence toward a global optimum by preventing abrupt changes in parameter updates. The system's performance was evaluated on the ImageNet VID validation set using two primary metrics, mean average precision, MAP, and frames per second, FPS. MAP quantifies the accuracy of object detection across all classes by calculating the average precision at multiple intersection over union, that's IOU, thresholds. FPS, frames per second, measures the detection speed, indicating the number of frames the system processes or can process per second, which is critical for real-time applications. The system achieved a notable MAP of 74.2%, surpassing the baseline YOLO model's 71.7% by 2.5%. In terms of speed, the system achieved a detection rate of 17.8 frames per second, which is close to the threshold for real-time applications, which are typically 24 to 30 frames per second. This frame rate represents a significant achievement, considering the additional computational overhead introduced by the SDFA and RR modules. When compared against state-of-the-art methods such as FGFA and RFCN, the system demonstrated a superior trade-off between accuracy and speed. While some competing models achieved higher accuracy, they did so at the cost of drastically reduced frame rates, often falling below real-time thresholds. For instance, FGFA with ResNet 101 achieved a slightly higher MAP of 77.5%, but processed frames at just 4.4 frames per second, rendering it completely impractical for real-time use. In contrast, this system delivers a more balanced approach, achieving high accuracy with a speed nearly 4 times faster than FGFA. Overall, the model performed exceptionally well. While it sacrificed some speed compared to its baseline YOLO configuration, it was able to achieve a significant increase in detection accuracy, particularly for challenging scenarios such as fast-moving, occluded, or deformed objects. What can we learn from this project? I believe the key takeaway is that the careful design of memory-based systems can drastically improve video object detection, even when working with lightweight detectors. We can't expect single-frame models to handle the inherent complexities of motion, blur, and occlusions. It will take novel systems like this to bridge the gap between image-based detectors and the dynamic demands of film. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.